ko te wā tēnei mō Heps Picks.
Yes, that's right. It's time for the educational point of our Thursday morning, where we learn something about someone and something. Mr. Martin Pepperell, you're on the line. Good morning, sir.
Morena.
How are you?
I'm okay, okay. That was a bit of comic timing going on there just before, Liam.
Well,
you know, you're getting your beats all patterned out.
Well, yeah, I'm full of comic timing. I don't know why you sound surprised. Gosh.
You know, it's a bit more than usual. This is good, though. Good. The edutainment section.
Yeah, the entertainment section of our morning. Actually, no, I called you the educational part, and I will stick to that, because we do learn something.
No. It's edutainment. It's education and entertainment.
Yeah, you're right.
Hey, okay, so jump scare. So this project we're talking about today, this is a project decades in the making. It's one of these things which could have only happened at the dawn of the 2020s. Everything had to line up for it to occur. We're going to listen to some music from a new production duo called Rush to the Unknown. Now, this project came together in the hills of Izu Peninsula in Japan. It's the work of two New Zealanders who fell in love with the sounds of jungle and drum and bass in different parts of New Zealand in the mid to late 90s, back in the era when, at the time, jungle drum and bass was the most futuristic music in the world. Of course, underground scene, the era of the Metalheads Club Night at the Blue Note Club in London, LCJ Bookham, rest in peace MC Conrad, all this good stuff, futuristic breakbeats, you know. So these guys loved this music, they DJ'd it, they had all this different involvement with it, and they didn't really spend any time together for decades.
Right,
the 2020s, okay. Two friends reconnect in Japan, and by this stage, they've been on musical journeys. One of them, jungle and drum and bass, had led them into instrumental hip-hop and ambient music, minimalist composition, you know, working with string sections, working on pop records, all sorts of stuff. The other one, you know, his pathway had taken him into Japan. He'd become fascinated with Japanese music, in particular in more recent years, type of music that people call Kankyo Ongaku, which translates to environmental music. It's the Japanese equivalent to ambient music, or as they called it in America in the mid to late 20th century, muzak, music that you'd hear played in malls and lobbies and elevators, these strange facsimiles of songs that almost sounded like a song you knew but weren't quite.
Yeah, you've done some for your picks before.
Oh, yeah, we've talked about this stuff. It's we've talked about this music. So these guys had, you know, gone down these journeys, and they, you know, they came back together and they reconnected, you know, sort of talking about what it had been like discovering jungle and drum and bass as teenagers in the 90s, and that feeling of being overwhelmed by, you know, these new sounds. They started making some music, and but, you know, sometimes to go home, you have to go somewhere new. So in the process of writing the music for this EP, their first release, EP1, you know, they started to, they looked at some of the influences they'd acquired since, you know, the ambient, the Kankyo Ongaku, New Age, minimalism, Japanese video game music, put all this together into a set of songs. It's the first of a series of releases, which are coming out over the next while. The track that we've got to listen to today is called Ulterior. Once again, this is a timing constraint. There's songs on this EP that are 5 or 6 minutes long. I went for something, I think it's maybe just under 3 minutes.
It is 3:36.
3:36, yeah, just under 4. Yeah, something more, this will give you a sense of what's going on, but, you know, this is morning radio, time is of the essence.
Nah, at least drag it out, who cares? Sorry, that's not appropriate.
It's your show, Liam. You can do what you want to do.
Yeah, that's right, I can. You've picked a good one. You've been considerate about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this will get the... What this one does is this one gets the point across about some of the more... the influences they've acquired over the last 20 years and how that folds in together with the 90s art core, jungle drum and bass sensibilities, the drum breaks, the synthesizers, all of that stuff. And it's just a really, you know, this is some nice, lush sort of music that you can imagine listening to while driving along the coast or through the hills, you know, going snowboarding, natural landscape stuff. It's a thing.
Hey, now, when they got, you know, back together a couple of years ago, do you know how that, like, went for them, like, creatively? Like, was it, like, an amazingly fun time?
Well, I mean, this is the first of several EPs of music.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah.
So, obviously, like, it went okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's important to note that they'd never made music together before. They were just, like, people who were, like, in, like, the jungle drum and bass scene. And, yeah, it's just, it's more the idea, I guess, what I'm trying to get across of this is, you know, there's a bunch of people out there who had this experience discovering that type of music in that period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, if you had that experience, I mean, I think, like, this is a pretty awesome record to listen to. And I also think, like, if you're someone who, you know, knows about that time period, and maybe there's not really a term for this, but there should be a specific term for the idea of having a sense of nostalgia for something that you've never experienced. This is something that we see a bit, you know, we see a bit of this... in dance music, electronic music. We actually just see it a lot in popular music in general these days. Simon Reynolds, the British music critic, calls it retromania. You know, this idea of pop culture's obsession with the past. Like, which, to be fair...
It's a very interesting point. Yes. Yes,
well,
so
I mean,
true.
You dial back to the late 70s and early 80s. You know, with the birth of hip-hop, I mean, the first hip-hop records are built around record labels getting their disco musicians to replay existing records for the rappers to rap on. Or when you get a couple more years down the line, you know, people are sampling records from the 70s, you know, 70s or 60s. But I guess what's interesting is, you know, early 80s, when that's all beginning with the sampler technology and all of that, like, there's sampling records that are only a few years old, older than, yeah, maybe records from 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then over time, you know, over time, people keep going back to that sort of wellspring. But it is a thing, you know, people are always drawing on the immediate past and the distant past. And I suppose that's the thing with this, is, you know, these guys, they're reaching back into their personal history, and they're also reaching back into the history of some styles of music that they didn't experience until they were older. Yeah, so the jungle drum and bass aspect, you know, that's revisiting this thing that was really formative for them. And then the rest of it, the kinkyo and gaku, the minimalism, the ambient and all of that, that's sort of, I think of this sort of thing as a reflection on what could have been, you know, because the question is always, like, we know what we're into, but what would we have been into if we'd been exposed to something else at an earlier age or a different point in time?
Oh, you know, I always think about things like that, like, all the time. Fixated on it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, it's just even the simple factor that, you know, sometimes in your... I don't know what it's like now, because obviously, you know, I'm not in the Zoomer TikTok generation, I'm too old for that. But
nonsense.
I do know in the past that people, you know, part of it was sort of what was the cool scene.
Where
it seemed like the place that seemed cool, fun, or exciting, or you wanted to be. And sometimes, like, just like something having that level of gravitas would draw people into it. And then in a few years' time, you might find they actually realise that there was something else that they were far more passionate about. You know, they needed a bit more time to, you know, come to terms, you know, figure out who they were, what they liked, what they're into. So it's interesting. It's a nice little wormhole of an EP, sort of stretching back decades in different directions. While at the same time landing somewhere looking a bit forward. So that's always nice.
Yeah, very. It's very interesting. And it's kind of like, I think it's like really fascinating how you've got two people who are different examples of paths taken. You know, almost like a similar-ish starting point almost, but then
The divergence. Yeah. But exactly, as you've correctly identified, what gets really interesting is how it becomes a full circle. You know, you diverge and then you come back together. And, in the end, the work is ultimately stronger for it, I think. I remember talking to Dallas from Fat Freddy's Drop about this. When Fat Freddy's started exploding in the early 2000s, Dallas started getting all these requests from bands and producers and things in Europe and overseas to, like, sing on their records.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, some people would have been like, oh, well, that's our front man. We can't have him running around doing all of this stuff. You know, this is going to dilute our brand. But the Freddies had the feeling that, like, the more experiences someone could have outside of the band, the more they could bring back
to the band. Yeah,
and the stronger
the
band would be as a result. So Dallas was able to go and do, like, sing on Broken Beat Records, House, like, even European reggaeton records, all this stuff. And in the process, all these people who heard his voice who might not have otherwise, who inevitably found their way back to Fat Freddy's Drop. And now, I mean, over 20 years on, Freddy's remains one of the more viable touring and festival acts, like, across, like, the European summer and winter circuit. So clearly all of that reaching out and getting engaged in different things paid off.
Yeah, it clearly did. And I think it's great kind of, I don't know, philosophy to have anyway. Well, Martin, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. And, love this song. And I really want to go listen to the rest of it as well. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Cheers. Thank you.
Have a great day. Oh, he's gone. I didn't even get a U2. He didn't want me to have a great day. He's like, nah, have a shit one. No, he would never. Anyway, here is Ulterior by Rush to the Unknown. Do enjoy it. I really, really like this.